I wanna get locked up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on my on the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears. Oh, the rock show, 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 the rock show. Oh, I want the rock show.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Rock Show. I'm Rocker Mike. We have Rob Rossi as my usual co-host. How you doing, Rob?
Hey, pretty good.
Okay, and today we're going to be talking about the punk rock band DOA. This is episode 196 of the Rock Show, Rob. We're getting closer to 200.
Yeah, to 200. I think we were talking a little bit before the show that we might do in a special location, so we'll let people know what we're going live.
Yeah, we might go live. We might, you know, have a few guests and things like that. We'll let you guys know as it gets closer. So we're talking about DOA.
Every time I was looking for DOA, keep sending me to a Japanese. I guess that's a Japanese band called DOA.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to put DOA punk band when you look.
Yeah, at it. I was like, kept sending me to, these guys are Japanese. That's.
You know, then of course there's like, you know, like three different movies named DOA.
And oh yeah, I was getting all kinds. Yeah. So then I'm fine. But I gotta tell you, I didn't hear these guys until now.
Yeah, I mean they're still pretty underground. Their claim to fame is they really probably hold the title as like the first hardcore band. Okay. At least in the title. And the genre title of their music. They have an album that came out in 1981 called Hardcore 81. It's like the first time that word was ever really used to describe punk rock, which really at that point had kind of, the original punk rock had kind of fizzled a little bit. And then now this like harder edge stuff was coming out. And DOA was like in the forefront of this. Nope, not the Mentors. There you go, DOA. Cool band. Okay. They're from Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
You know, I'll probably always say like the two greatest things out of Canada is hockey and DOA. But like I said, they're kind of considered the founders of hardcore. Some other bands in there are like Black Flag, the Dead Kennedys, the Bad Brains, of course. You know, their second album, like I said, Hardcore 81. Use that term hardcore. It's pretty much the first reference for that second wave of punk rock that came along. Now, singer / guitarist Joey Shithead Keithley, okay, great name.
He's the
only founding member to still be in the band, okay, throughout their entire history. They had the same singer. Also, there was a bass player named Randy Rampage that came in and out of the band a couple of times. They've had quite a few different people in the lineup. I'm sure you saw that when you looked at it, Rob. There were a lot of people.
There were 100 a lineup. You know what's the funny thing about them? That they called them a hardcore punk band. And then you had the Black Flag, the Dead Kennedys. All those other people were considered like hardcore.
It was all band, happening right? Around the same time. You know, Canada, I guess, you know, I'm sure they were well aware of what was going on down in the San Francisco area with Black Flag.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Dead Kennedys, not Black Flag. Black Flag was down in Southern California.
Yeah.
And Bad Brains here in New York and D.C., where they were headquartered. You know, it was all kind of like gelling together into a second wave of punk rock. So one thing that was unique about DOA is they were very political. They were very outspoken on things. They were very like anti-racism, anti-globalization. Okay. Wow. They were all for freedom of speech and, you know, no kind of censorship and things like that. And some of their songs were about environmentalism as well. They also put their money where their mouth is with things. Okay. They had something called, the hell is it called now? God, my brain is shot. Oh, talk minus action equals zero. Okay. It was a slogan that they had that basically meant like, you know, put your money where your mouth is. Okay. Cause talk minus any action equals nothing. All right. So they were involved in, raising money for the defense fund for people, that were, they felt were, you know, wrongly jailed or whatever. Now, also, they were involved with Alternative Tentacles Records at some point. I'll get into that a little bit. Alternative Tentacles is the label started by the Dead Kennedys, who Jello Biafra would take an interest in this band and put some stuff out on his label. Now, founder Joe Keithley, shithead, okay, is also the founder of Sudden Death Records, which released music by DOA and also several other Canadian bands, mostly.
But Mike, the name DOA, that's Dead on Arrival,
Dead
right?
Dead on Arrival, yes.
That's what they meant by saying that?
Yes.
Why do they call themselves Dead by Arrival?
You know, it's funny. It was the original lead singer was a guy named Harry Homo.
Harry what?
Homo.
Homo. Joy Shithead, Harry Homo.
They actually, well, Shithead wasn't in the band yet. Harry Homo was in the band very, very briefly when they were just starting out. But when they got started in 78, they were kind of like, in 1977, there was a Vancouver band called The Skulls. Okay. And Joey Shithead was in that band. And there were also some founding members of the Subhumans. And there was a guy named Brian Wimpy Roy Goble and Ken Dimwit Montgomery involved in the Skulls. So they broke up when they tried to move to Toronto and make it, and it didn't work out exactly. I'm pretty sure that's what happened to them. They kind of moved back to Vancouver and it fell apart. So Joey Shithead Keithley in Vancouver decided to form a new band called DOA. They had a lead singer, okay, named Harry Homo. Shithead was just playing guitar at this point, very briefly early on. He wasn't singing. So they had this guy named Harry Homo, and he's the guy who came up with the band's name. DOA, to answer your question. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just sounds like a cool punk rock name. You know,
yeah, Dead on Arrival.
Surprised there wasn't a band already called that, you know?
Yeah.
So the band, the early lineup was Dimwit. Okay, Dimwit's brother, actually, Chuck Biscuits on drums. Randy Rampage on bass. You had Harry Homo singing, and you had Keithley Shithead on guitar. Now, the first gig took place at the Japanese Hall in Vancouver on February 20th of 1978. But apparently after that gig, Harry Homo blew it and got fired. So they got rid of him. And Keithley then became the band's singer and guitar player as well. All right. So they brought in a second guitarist named Randy Romance, okay, briefly. Okay, in March of 78, but then he would leave. Okay, that would be kind of a thing with them. You know, they had this kind of revolving door over the years. The band began playing frequently around Vancouver and added guitarist Brad Kent the following June. That summer, they recorded and self-released their first single, the 4-song EP, Disco Sucks. Good punk rock title.
Yeah.
The single soon topped the charts at the University of San Francisco station KUSF. So it caught the attention of a San Francisco radio station, college radio station. this prompted the band to come down to San Francisco from Vancouver, which isn't all that far, I guess, and basically play in the punk rock circuit in San Francisco, which involved, of course, Mabue Gardens, where the Dead Kennedys got their start, and the Avengers, and that whole scene. Crime played there as well. They played their first show there in August of 78. Now, it was during this trip that the Dead Kennedys frontman, Jello Biafra, became aware of them, okay? And he just loved them right away. Brad Kent would get fired at this point in September of that year. And then later that fall, the band recorded and released their second single, The Prisoner. So in May of 79, a few months later, the band embarked on their first full North American tour. Remember, they're from Canada.
Okay? Yeah.
Upon its completion, they hired Vancouver journalist and activist Ken Lester as their manager. Lester would book another tour for them the following October, in the middle of which they flew back to Vancouver to open for The Clash.
Wow.
In the middle of that tour, they left North America, flew back to Vancouver because The Clash was playing there and they needed an opening band.
That got to be big then.
That was the Pacific Coliseum. Yeah, that was The Clash's, should have been the London Calling Tour, I believe.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so that was a big deal. They played a place called the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver. They soon after released their third single, World War III, with the B-side, What You Gonna Do. In late 79, they added second guitarist Dave Gregg. Sometimes they, you know, played live with one guitarist or two, okay? Soon after, Chuck Biscuits left the band. Rampage left the band as well, after a disastrous gig at the University of British Columbia's Student Union Building. And they were replaced by Andy Graffiti and Simon, also known as Stubby Pecker Wild, on drums.
These names, unbelievable. Yeah,
Andy Graffiti was playing bass, of course. Keith Lee, Shithead, soon became dissatisfied with the band's performances with the new lineup, however, and Biscuits and Rampage would rejoin the band in March of 1980. Now, you remember Chuck Biscuits also ended up playing with the Misfits, too.
Yeah.
You remember the name, right?
Yeah. So these guys broke up, got back together, broke up. Because that's what, like when you look at the how many times they were active. They were active for a long time. Then they went they were active again, and then they went back.
Well, what I was just describing was some lineup changes. An actual breakup hadn't happened yet, but yes, they did. They do break up a couple of times, get back together.
It's crazy.
Over the years. I mean, you know, this is how bands are. You know, it's especially underground bands. They can't keep it together all the time. Guys got to work, you know, all that, you know.
You know what always surprised me about bands when when they put an ad on to get a guitarist. And those are always some great stories. Like they'll put an ad to get somebody and they'll come in there.
Yeah.
It can change everything. It's funny.
Oh, it does. And I mean, sometimes people come in, they don't even know how to play. They just like the ad. All of a sudden they're in the fucking band, you know. Okay, I'll do my best, you know. What are you gonna do? But that's the great thing about punk rock. So now DOA would release their first full-length album called Something Better Change on the Friends Records label in 1980, and they continued touring the United States and Canada extensively at that point. On April 21st, 1981, the band released their second album. This is called Hardcore 81. The record's title and its extensive North American promotional tour is sometimes credited with popularizing the term hardcore punk. So that's kind of that was kind of like an influence on the whole scene, which was getting underway at that point.
Mike, would this be Hardcore 81? Would that be one of the albums you would put on your list of albums you should hear before you die?
Yeah, I might. I didn't think of that, to be honest with you. I know we're looking at doing another show like that. We did that last year.
I'm just saying, because that Hardcore 81, you know, that might be something that people would be like, oh, yeah, it came from.
You know what's interesting, too, is there was so many things converging in the little 80s, in the early 80s to make that scene. You have this album, Hardcore 81. Yeah. You have the Dead Kennedys, Black Flag, Bad Brains doing their thing.
Angry Samoans.
What's that?
Angry Samoans.
Angry Samoans. Oh, yeah. Can't leave them out. Okay. And but at the same time in England, you have what's known as the UK 82 scene, which is bands like GBH.
Oh, yeah.
And the Exploited. We talked about that in other shows.
Yeah.
You know, all this kind of like was happening on both sides of the pond. Okay. And it created this whole scene in New York. I mean, we had the A7 club. Okay. Now called Niagara. All right. Yeah. And that's where that was the center for hardcore. And DOA, tell you the truth, I'm not sure if they played there or not. They might have. Okay. But they might have been a little too big to play there, but I'm not positive. It was a couple of years before I was on that scene. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, this album had an influence on the New York scene for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So Randy Rampage would be out again. Okay. He was fired from the band in January of 82. And was replaced by ex-Skulls drummer Dimwit on bass. Now, after a short tour of California, Chuck Biscuits left the band again and joined up with Black Flag. And that's how the Misfits got wind of Chuck Biscuits.
Chuck Biscuits, all right.
Because they were very tight with Black Flag.
Yeah.
All right, so Dimwit would switch back to drums, and then Subhuman singer Wimpy Roy, another ex-Skulls member, was hired as the new bass player and second singer, leaving Keith Lee as the last remaining original member. And it's kind of been like that ever since. Right? Like,
yes.
He's really the last original member. This lineup would last from 82 to 83, and then later 85 to 86, and produced a bunch of releases, including the EP War on 45. That's actually, if you look for that now, you can get it. It's almost like a full-length album. It's not an EP anymore. They expanded it out with a bunch of, I think, demos and stuff like that. Now, War on 45 found the band kind of changing their sound a little bit with touches of a little bit of reggae in the music and funk music a little bit, a little heavier bass, as well as making their anti-war and anti-imperialistic stances more clear. They were becoming more, even more political. Now, 1985's album Let's Wreck the Party, and then 1987's True North Strong and Free saw the band taking on a more mainstream hard rock oriented production. But I don't know if I really agree with that comment, because I remember those records and they were still pretty heavy. Okay. Yeah. But yes, they were a little less punk, okay, but still political, which is what a lot of their stuff was about.
But they were a little bit more hardcore,
a little more hard rock, a little
hard rock.
Yeah, a slightly less punk. But I, you know, it wasn't like they turned, you know, into Bruce Springsteen or anything like that. All right, not at all. Okay, now the band's lineup changes would continue after Let's Wreck the Party, with Dimwit being replaced by Care Bellevaux. Bellevaux was actually only in the band 3 weeks, but recorded the Expo Hurts Everyone 7-inch, as well as two songs for True North, Strong and Free, before being replaced by John Card from the band Personality Crisis, named after the New York Dolls song. Dave Gregg quit the band in 1988 after DOA fired their manager, Ken Lester, to which he was kind of very close with. So the band then hired Chris Proham from the band The Dayglo Abortions as a replacement.
What a name.
They were a great band. They weren't around that long, but you know, I miss those days. I grew up, and you did too, during that time. And you know, I was always into underground stuff, and you'd find these bands with these fucking names, and it was just like you couldn't stop laughing. You know, it was like, this is hilarious.
Okay? Yeah, because they must have been smoking some. Oh, I got a great name.
Yeah, let's get a name that'll just really piss everybody off. All right, Day Glow Abortions. You know, nah. I mean, that's what's missing in music today is the humor. You know,
that sounds so funny.
Bands like Green Day, okay, that are put on this pedestal. They got no fucking sense of humor, none. Sorry. Which is why I will never do a show on them. Fuck that. Okay, so. Now we're going to get into, like, the first breakup period, all right?
Yeah, you know, I see that. The reunion. Yeah.
1990 album Murder featured Aurora, almost kind of metal sound, like a thrash metal sound, rather than the punk sound that they were known for. The same year also produced a collaboration with Dead Kennedys singer Jello Biafra on Last Scream of the Missing Neighbors, okay? In August of 1990, Joey decided he was breaking up DOA, Joey Shithead. Yeah. But at the suggestion of promoter Dirk Dirksen, sounds like a porno guy, right? Dirk, yeah. Dirk. They did a farewell tour of the West Coast. I remember this happening. They were saying they were breaking up, but we're going to do a few shows. They ended up playing their final show December 1st, 1990 at the Commodore in Vancouver. In 91, they released a posthumous live album entitled Talk Minus Action Equals Zero, their old slogan, while Keithley pursued an acting career.
Wow.
Starting to get into acting. Okay. 19 months, though, later, DOA would get back together. And it would be Joey Shithead and Wimpy Roy in the summer of 92 that would put the band together. Fellow Canadian and punk rock veteran John Wright from the band No Means No suggested they hire Ken Jensen from the band Red Tide as their new drummer, which they did.
Oh, wow.
The lineup released an EP, this new lineup, and two albums in the early 1990s, one called 13 Flavors of Doom and Loggerheads. These albums found the band replacing the more hard rock oriented sound of the 80s with a return to punk rock, although it was a heavier, tighter brand of punk than their earlier work. You know, I suspect, and I'm not putting them down, but by that point in the early 90s, you know, alternative music was a thing. Bands like Green Day were starting. Okay. There was kind of like this, you know, No Means No was out there. There was kind of this like, resurgence of punk. Eventually it would be a top 40 version with bands like Blink 182 and things like that. I think DOA wanted to get back together to kind of jump on that a little bit. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not insulting them by saying that. I mean, so many punk bands of the first, or even that, you know, the first generation and even the second generation hardcore, you know, they were left in the dust, really, basically, because this commercialized version of punk came out. And, you know, they were probably being mentioned again as a band to check out. So 19 months later, they got back together. Now, these albums, 13 Flavors of Doom and Loggerheads, were produced by Wright, John Wright from No Means No. Okay, and he played keyboards on the recordings as well. The band then added Ford Pier on guitar and backing vocals.
But now, these guys were always a threesome, right? They were a trio.
Oh, four-piece, you know, occasional five-piece, okay, when they had two guitars. It varied over the years.
It varied, right? But they originally they were only a three-piece band, right? Like a trio.
Originally, well, no, because they had they were a four-piece because they had a lead singer, that guy Harry Homo, for a minute. Okay, and then Shithead would take over on guitar and sing. Okay, then they would get another guitarist and be
another guitarist. Another.
Yes. I don't think they spent much time as a three-piece. I think it was pretty much a four-piece or even five.
Yeah, because all the pictures I find, they're so three-piece band, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the I think they're like they might be like that now. Okay, I don't think they were always that way. I'm trying to think, did they? No, because they had a drummer, bass, sometimes two guitarists, so four piece.
Yeah,
you're showing some. Who's that? Barry Gordy.
Yeah, I went too far. This is the only. I did. They have one four piece that I did because this is the album cover when they were younger.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever reason, you know, I know I saw them as a four piece.
That's how we do for concert. You know, you got that.
Yeah. I mean, they had a lot of lineup changes, you know?
Yeah. When you look at them, oh my God, that lineup is crazy. Oh, there's the four guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 1995, tragedy would strike the band when drummer Ken Jensen was killed in a fire. It was a house fire. They started the Ken Jensen Memorial. Okay. And, there was an EP called the Ken Jensen Memorial Single. And that was released on Jello Biafra's Alternative Tentacles label, which included two tracks from DOA and, from Red Tide as well. Okay. Another band. John Wright filled in on drums for the 9th full length album, The Black Spot. Okay, when that was recorded, the album featured a more basic sing-along type punk rock sound that was reminiscent of the band's late 70s and early 80s output. They could be melodic at times, okay? So that was kind of a route they were going down. Now, the late 1990s found the band's lineup in turmoil once again, with Wimpy Roy leaving the band after a decade and a half of service. And yeah. Someone named Kuba joining to play bass from 1997 until 2001. Shithead would experiment with different basses and drummers and then release the album Festival of Atheists in 1998. By the early 2000s, the band had basically found a permanent drummer named the Great Baldini.
Okay. Great Baldini, that's a fantastic.
In 2002, Keith Lee put out his first solo album called Beat Trash, and original bassist Randy Rampage would return to the band after nearly 20 years for the Win the Battle album. However, that reunion again would not last, with Rampage leaving the band again after recording the album to be replaced by Dan Yaremko. The Lost Tapes was for the first release of Keith Lee's newly revived Sudden Death label, followed by Festival of Atheists. During this period, Keith Lee also saw the re-release of the band's classic early records on Sudden Death, okay, several of which had been out of print for many years. I remember getting into DOA in, I want to say, probably the late 80s, okay, something mid to late 80s, and some of that stuff was very hard to find. So yeah. It was good that years later he put this stuff out. Now, we're talking a period now from 2003 to 2013. In 2003, Vancouver Mayor Larry Campbell declared December 21st to be DOA Day in honor of the band's 25th anniversary. In the same year, the band released a career-spanning retrospective entitled War and Peace. It's definitely a record you should get if you're into them at all. It's got a little bit of everything. 2004 found the band releasing a ska-sounding album called Live Free or Die. 2006, Randy Rampage would join again for the third time in his band. In this band.
So this guy left and came back, left and came back. He must have had a love-hate relationship with Shithead.
I guess so. You know, Rob, I got to tell you, just side note, I'm drinking that Dr. Pepper, strawberry, and cream.
Yeah.
So you ever have that?
No, it's delicious.
Oh, fucking great. I'm like addicted to it. And I don't really drink soda, but I'm addicted to it.
Yeah. I mean, so, like, it was like that Dr. Brown.
Dr. Brown, yeah. That's awesome.
That's like crack, man.
I know. Can't just have one. You gotta have like,
fucking 20.
I know, but whole freaking 12 pack. Anyway, this lineup would remain stable with the band, okay, until 2008 when the great Baldini left, okay, to be replaced by new drummer James Hayden, all right? So much for being permanent, right?
Yeah.
Also in 2008, it was announced that Bob Rock of Metallica fame would be producing the band's next album in time for their 30th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, by this point in the mid-2000s, they were veterans, and they had lasted, even though they broke up a little bit, but they, you know, a lot of lineup changes, but they lasted, and they had a well-known reputation as a classic, you know, punk slash hardcore
30
band.
30 years, that's no joke, you know, for a band, you know, that's legacy there when you've been together 30 years.
Yeah, and you know, bands like Metallica called them an influence too. Okay, remember, Metallica is from San Francisco.
Yeah.
Okay, so when they made their debut in San Francisco, I'm sure some of the guys from Metallica were there in the late 70s. Now, James Hayden would quit before DOA started to record to be replaced by Floor Tom Jones in September 2008. DOA would release Northern Avenger and embarked on their 30th anniversary tour. On the eve of that tour, it was announced that Randy Rampage was being replaced by Dan Yaremko once again. Okay. So DOA played several dates in the summer of 2009 as part of the Vans Warped Tour. Okay. They were on the Warped Tour. On May 1st, 2010, DOA released their 14th full-length record called Talk Minus Action Equals Zero. Okay. Even though they had a live album with that same name. Okay. In 1990, drummer Jesse Pinner of the band Raised by Apes took the place of Floor Tom Jones beginning on DOA's subsequent August 2010 tour due to Floor Tom Jones' commitments to his job at Canada Post. Okay. What is Canada Post? I wonder. Is that a newspaper?
Yeah, what is that?
I guess. Okay. So in 2012, Joey Shithead announced that he would be seeking nomination as an NDP candidate in the BC, British Columbia, provincial election. As a result, DOA announced an indefinite hiatus and began their farewell tour on January 18th, 2013, in celebration of the band's 35th anniversary. Now, there would be another reunion. They would break up for a while.
Yeah.
There would be another reunion. On September 22nd, 2014, Keithley, Shithead, officially announced on the Sudden Death Records website that he had decided to reform the band with Patty Duddy on drums and Mike Maggot Hodzell on bass and would be embarking on a Canadian tour that October in support of the recently released live album Welcome to Chinatown. This lineup recorded and released a studio album called Hard Rain Falling in 2015. And in April 2016, the band released a new version of the song Fucked Up Ronnie, which was about Reagan, entitled Fucked Up Donald, about Donald Trump, okay, as a single. And basically, that's it, okay? They're still active, all right? Yeah. If you look at their discography, after Hard Rain Falling, they released Fight Back in 2018. They released an album named Treason in 2020.
Yeah.
That's where we stand right now. Not much from them since COVID ended, as far as I know. But they need to come back.
Good band. Probably just working on new material or something.
Yeah, yeah. Good, you know, good band. They always seem to come back strong.
Definitely a long history, man, of hardcore. And they changed through the years, right? They went back and forth from part to hardcore rock.
Yeah, they played, some of their albums got a little thrashy at times, like in the early 90s. But, you know, they always would go back to that punk sound that they started.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hardcore sound.
That's good. So another band that I would never heard of if it wasn't for Mike telling me, hey, check this out, look up DOA. At first, I was finding the Japanese band and movies, all kinds, so I got to the right band, you know? So, yeah. Mike, how can people find you if they want to talk to you or send you a note?
Well, I'm very active on Facebook under Rocko Mike, not Rocker Mike, Rocko Mike. You could find our Rock Show podcast group page on Facebook, which is getting close to 3,000 members, I believe. Then, of course, I'm on Instagram, RockerMike212. I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter, RockerMike212. And everything else, pretty much Rocker Mike. You could find me on Truth Social, Getter, Cloud Hub, MeWe, some of these lesser known ones, all under Rocker Mike. How about you, Rob?
And us, you can find me, you can actually find me on the website, Getting Lumped Up, and you can find all other shows and stuff through the Getting Lumped Up. You can, I got links to the YouTube, X, Facebook, and Instagram posts also, everything Getting Lumped Up. So if you pretty much put Getting Lumped Up, it pops up right away on your feed and Google and anything else. But we got an archive of about 600 shows that we've done together with a conspiracy, with the Son of Sam, with the Rock Show. But this is the longest running show right now that we have. It's pretty
this was the original show.
Huh?
This was the original show that we did.
The original show, yeah, that started.
Now, actually, this is the first show for March of 2024, and we've been at it now for exactly 5 years.
Yeah, wow. Unbelievable. And it's up and down. Like, you know, we're getting good. I'm glad that a lot of people are subscribing to the channel. Thank you for that. We reach 3,042 subscribers. We're trying to aim for 10,000 before the end of the year.
That'd be nice.
You know, so that's what I really want. So, like that, we can put some stuff together and continue doing these great shows and resources that you people like so much. Because I'm noticing that a lot of the older shows people are watching now. And we also have the Percent Show. In the Percent Show, we got a lot of episodes there, too.
Yeah, I don't think we ever numbered them. But we, you know, we didn't have, like, you know, episode 1, 2, 3. But
yeah,
but
I started number one. I did it with, like, a 102 just because we definitely got over 100 episodes. So
Yeah. I mean, and these were all Rocker Mike and Rob Presents is the interview show. We've interviewed so many people.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I did, but... So I'm going to try to see keep up some kind of log on those. But there's so many different people that you really know. You can find the guests. You just present it and the name of the person come up.
And I want to give a special shout out to Bryce Watson of Esoteric Atlanta, that podcast. We've kind of teamed up a little bit casually on some shows dealing with our Son of Sam topic, the Son of Sam Chronicles. We have on hiatus right now, but we're still talking about it on some other shows. And also some other things, you know, we did a podcast about Marie Laveau, the New Orleans voodoo queen. Esoteric Atlanta is a very cool podcast. Bryce does a great job, and I just want to give a shout out to her.
Not bad. So everybody out there, remember, don't get drunk.
Get lumped up.
We'll see you next time.
Take care.
I wanna get lumped up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on mine. On the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears.